morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Fetman, and you're listening to On the Comma Couch Radio. And as always, I am joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
Doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, just fine. You know what, Dazza? We're not alone today.
No, we're going interloper.
As a matter of fact, we have a guest. We have the director of FutureSoc 2000 AD, one Mr. Paul Goodwin. How are you doing today?
Hello. I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure's all ours. Like I said, we've done shows in the past before, with Dazza especially being English. We've talked 2000 AD. We've talked the documentary to a degree. And we're just thrilled to have you on. So we have a plethora of questions. The first of which I'm going to ask right off the bat. What inspired you to make this documentary in the first place?
Having read it as a sort of teenager. I mean, I read it as when I was a little kid, but then properly, you know, getting my collector head on when I was sort of in my early teens.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that I'm pretty sure anybody that's contacted with it over the years, you end up carrying it around the rest of your life. And, the long story is, a good friend of mine from many years ago, who's a horror writer director, Sean Hogan, who's, producer on the documentary. We were just chatting in a pub one evening about things we could work on together, something that would, you know, really light a fire and be exciting and something to get into. And I just thought that it's, you know, between us, we figured it's something, you know, the story of 2000 AD, something that nobody's done yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's really covered. There's been a few bits and bobs on British TV, over the years, but you know, we figured, look, if somebody else made this, we would be there. We'd be, you know, just thinking, shit, why did we think of that? You know,
well, you beat them to it.
And honestly, it was just kind of like, well, look, how cool would it be to just kind of contact whatever creators we could get hold of and just go and sit and interview them and ask them questions we wanted to, you know, ask and hear the answers to, stuff we thought was interesting. So yeah, you know, he kind of said, yeah, I'll help you get that made. That's a kick-ass idea. Wow. I should probably ask. I mean, what are my language restrictions with you guys?
It's anything. You're welcome to swear as to your heart's content.
All right, fine. Thank you.
Sorry about we didn't go by that beforehand.
Sorry, before.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
All right. That's basically it. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, we were just, Sean is obviously a big fan of it as well. And then, you know, we got a small crew together and you know, it's an independent documentary. You know, we funded it ourselves and just kind of took a couple of years going around sort of gathering more interviews and polishing in the edit and until we had sort of, you know, a full start, middle and end story. Where we're at right now, we're really proud because we just, you know, just over Christmas, we had a limited theatrical release in the UK. It's out on DVD. It hit all the digital channels in the UK as well. And, you'll be sort of pleased to know we've just hooked up with a US digital organization. I don't know what sort of time frame we're talking about here, but a deal has been signed, and I guess like pretty soon it's going to be on whatever the, you know, major channels are in the US as well, which is something we've been dying to get done for a long time, so we're really proud of that.
Superb.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's scoop, by the way. That is scoop. That literally happened on Friday, so
wow,
excellent. Okay. I mean, I absolutely love the documentary. It sort of brought back a lot of memories for me. And like you, I was somebody that, as a little kid, I sort of read it from time to time, but it wasn't until my teens that I really could appreciate, you know, the rebellion and the anarchy of it and everything. And one of the things I wanted to ask is you basically had 40 years of history of the comic to fit into like about 100 minutes, less than 2 hours. You know, how did you set about actually, you know, going this, and what was the challenges for that?
Yeah, it was a big ask, man. It's hard. It was really, really hard because Well, we didn't actually set a limit on ourselves, but we knew that there was a good enough story, especially once we started meeting some of the guys, right? And when we, you know, after we had the meeting with Pat in the can, and we were like thinking this guy's, you know, he's so great on camera. He's pure entertainment. Some of the other people that were agreeing to be involved, we were really pleased to get like Neil Gaiman, Grant Morrison, John Wagner, Alan Grant, Bolland, Dave Gibbons. You know, they started to come, you know, everyone was sort of being ticked off as we were going. We were like, these guys are the A-list. So we really want it to be a cinema release, you know, a film, as opposed to something that would be just like maybe an hour long TV spot or something. So, it was hard. It was hard. I mean, there was Sean will tell you, you know, I did the bulk of the edit and the first pass where we cut all the chaff out and had everything in sequences and timelines that we thought was good was like 9 hours long. So that was everything I thought was funny, interesting, you know, and basically it took about probably another 6 months to hack that down to, you know, what is it? 105.
Wow.
So it was hard work, but it was, you know, honestly, it was all, you know, we picked a project that I've enjoyed every minute of because it's just been brilliant fun. And then you just kind of keep hacking whole chunks out, sections. So yeah, I mean, I think we're hoping one day that we'll be able to, obviously we've got loads and loads of extra footage of all these interviews that we did. Most of them are around an hour ish each. A couple of them were like,
sounds like a sequel
five,
right there.
Sorry, say that again.
I said, that sounds like with so much extra stuff, that's a sequel right off the bat you have right there.
Yeah. I mean, I at the moment, we've just had a single DVD release in the UK, but I know like the fans of 2000 AD on the message boards and stuff like that, who have all just been brilliant with their support for it all the way through production. I know they would certainly be interested in sort of seeing in anything, all the extras, you know, any sort of full interviews with some of these guys who are like all our heroes, you know. So I'm hoping one day we can get a longer version out there. But for now, you know, it's the 105 minute feature that we're
excellent.
Yeah.
So with the actual interviews you've got, how much footage did you actually shoot per interview?
Well, like I say, we wrote questions for each individual, creator, which were tailored to them, obviously, to the strips they'd been involved with and what period of 2000 AD's history they'd been involved. So you had stuff that was to do more with the publishing and the management of it. And then there were, you know, some bit more, you know, we drilled down into a bit more inspiration behind specific stories and artwork styles and things like that. So everybody had like a real spread, and then everyone had like a bunch of questions that were similar to each other. So we knew we could have a section where we asked everybody's opinion about this one thing, you know, so we could have a choice of things people to select from. Sorry, Dan, what was the question?
how long did they actually go on for?
The shortest one we had, have you ever spoken to John Wagner?
No,
Darren?
you may have sort of read that as he's got older, I think he's sort of less and less interested in talking about these days. It was a bit of a tough one, but you know, I think, hopefully we were sort of pleased that he really loosened up and sort of seemed to enjoy it in the end. But he did sit down with us and just say, listen, first thing I'm going to tell you guys is I'm sick to fucking death of talking about Judge Dredd, right? Like, oh shit. pulling notes of paper and going, well, we won't ask that then. But no. So he was probably around the shortest, which was about half an hour, 40 minutes. And I would say without a shadow of a doubt, Pat Mills, who was so generous with his time and really kind of, you know, really, really, into it and really wanted to be involved. You know, we were at his house for his full interview runs at 5 hours.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, this he's such a firebrand and he's such a passionate guy. You know, he was really wanted to talk at length and get everything kind of covered and make sure that the true story was being told. So, you know, that just all that did was help us really, because he provided, obviously, Darren, you've seen, he's pretty much the spine of it at being the creator of 2000 AD, the editor for its first sort of few months, and then being with it in and, you know, on and off over the years and still writing for it today. So, you know, we kind of knew Pat would be sort of the start and end of the story.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that if Fuel Base would just release that 5 hours, I would watch the whole thing. Because he was awesome. He was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I might have to run that past legal if I was just to release it uncut, to be honest. But I mean, you've seen it. So you could, you know, we touched on quite a lot of the, it's not all kind of, what a great comic 2000 AD, you know, is all the time. You know, it certainly had its ups and downs over the years. And, you know, hopefully we've served that story quite, you know, well enough and sort of, you know, people have described it as warts and all. And that's really what we set out to do. I wasn't really interested in just, you know, a fanboy kind of like, oh, it's great. Isn't Nemesis great? Wasn't Johnny Alpha cool? Wasn't Kano's the flat top of his head? Didn't that look wicked? You know what I mean? It, 2000 AD is such an interesting and important comic and cultural sort of thing that we really wanted to get a bit deeper and investigate it, look at the influence of it, ask people, you know, investigate what that influence is, how far it reaches. So, you know, we're pleased. I'm very, very pleased with the end result anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up just now that it was warts and all. And one of the segments that really stuck to me was when we talked about how little we get, because obviously it was basically very anarchic, very creative and everything, but there was obviously bosses and people in charge and how little regard at times they had for their creators. Yeah. I mean, when we talked a lot about how they treated the artwork that they had piled up and everything, using it as doorstops and things like that.
That bit to me is like a horror movie. I still have to sit and watch that and go, oh, you're watching it through your hands. This is Brian Bolland and Dave Gibbons as well that you're talking about. You know, two of the, you know, greatest, most highly regarded artists in the business. And, horrible that bit, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely shocking. I mean, you know, the fact that they used it to mop up stains and stuff like that, just for stories. But listening to those stories, what other things stood out for you, how they were actually treated, you know, as the creative influence, as the creators?
Well, it's the fucking story of comics, isn't it?
Mm.
Going back to Siegel and Schuster and Bill Finger and all these,
mm-hmm.
these problems. What's his name?
Bob Kane?
Not Ditko. Yeah, he's the Spider-Man guy, you know. Yeah, Ditko, you know.
Ditko, yeah.
Nobody can find him, can they? It's just sort of, I mean, at the heart of the story of Future Shock, the 2000 AD story, is the story of, you know, management treating creators like shit, you know, failing to appreciate their talent for what it is and respect them and then losing them, you know, and that's, you know, I think you see that same thing in movies, in, you know, publishing, book publishing, in art, in any sort of creative field. You got these sort of vacuous suits trying to sell the art, you know, and undervaluing the creators themselves. And it's a horrible thing really, but you know, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of brings them to another question that I asked. I pretty much know what one of the answers that this is going to be, but you had a great array of interviews all lined up. Who were the ones who you couldn't actually get or who weren't interested in appearing?
Well, you know, the elephant in the room is Alan Moore, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, we knew really that we wouldn't get to speak to Alan Moore. We knew before we started. We did contact him, but got, you know, he politely declined to take part. I mean, I don't know if you guys followed that, the whole thing he had a couple of years ago, him and Grant Morrison firing shots across the internet.
Oh yes, I saw that. Yeah. That was absolutely entertaining as far as.
Yeah, it was riveting. And, you know, we sort of all read that as it was going on, and we kind of, and Alan Moore said more than a few times he'd done talking about anything to do with 2000 AD, that whole period of his career. In fact, he doesn't really talk about the past in general ever anymore, does he? I mean, he tends to sort of stay focused on what he's currently working on, and that's that, and that's fine. That's sort of up to him. Yeah, but we did ask in the way that he'd asked to be contacted as well. But still, you know, I hope he gets to see it actually. I haven't actually pinged him maybe I should send him a DVD.
Yeah.
I don't know. What'd you think?
There you go. It wouldn't hurt. The worst he could do is not watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we spoke to Leah, his daughter, who's obviously a writer on 2000 AD today.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, his presence is felt definitely through the documentary. But yeah, we kind of knew at the outset, and we kind of sort of said before we interviewed anyone, we had our wish list of creators who we wanted to speak to. And we were kind of like, look, if we can get two out of three of, or three out of four, you know, of Mills, Gaiman, Grant Morrison and Alan Moore, then we'll be, then it, we've got it, you know? And it was, and we got three out of four. So we were really,
that's pretty good.
Those four guys being sort of the big sort of international names and people most important to telling the 2000 AD story, I think.
Yes. Congratulations on getting those interviews, by the way.
Thank you, man. I tell you what, I mean, I got to say everybody, apart from Wagner, maybe. No, John was really, really, by the end of the interview, he'd done a 180 and he was like, guys, good, interesting questions, man. Really appreciated it. So he was cool. But everybody who sat down with us was like, you know, really supportive, telling us you're doing a good thing. It's about time somebody told this story, and they were happy to share and really share some deep stuff. I think we were really, really pleased with the candid nature of some of the interviews that we got.
Yeah. I mean, just to go back to the start of the documentary, you pretty much started by showing Britain in the 70s with the strikes. You had the miners' strike looming. You had basically, you know, high unemployment and everything. How much of that do you think influenced, you know, the style of 2000 AD and the stories?
Oh, massively, massively influenced. Certainly the writers of the stories, even the artwork, I'd say, you know, there's a sort of a really angry, and I use the word graffiti, but not in the beautiful graffiti we know today, you know, political agitprop, real sort of felt anger of Britain in that era that was really those writers, those guys, most notably Pat, that, you know, they were burning on it, you know, and I always think, you know, great writing comes from something, you know, great stories and plots and that are good. But when your writer's really got something to write about, then that's where great stuff happens. You know, that's when they produce their best stuff. So yeah, I think, I mean, it was important to us if you're going to analyze anything properly, I think you need to look at the sort of social political context in which it was begun. So, you know, we didn't go back too far, but we talked about the political landscape in Britain at the time, the comics landscape, what the run up to to 2000 AD had been, just really sort of so you could feel during the film, you know, feel the impact when it did come out, you know, and we're trying to kind of, I guess, I mean, to be honest, I wasn't quite old enough to buy it when it first came out in 77. I was born in 74. But you know, we wanted to sort of convey that impact of it when it did hit and like instantly was the biggest comic, you know, I mean, I think they said Prog 1 was shifting like 250,000 units, you know. It was massive when it came out. So, wow. So yeah, it was important.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, I can't imagine a comic like 2000 AD being printed in America at that time. I mean, the idea of a comic where in the first issue they had Margaret Thatcher, shot to death in the first. I can't imagine America that they would do said, I don't know who was president at the time. I can't think that we would have Jimmy Carter. Being depicted in the White House steps or anything like that. And you talk about sort of like, you know, the anger involved. I mean, when Pat Mills was talking about Nemesis the Warlock, and I always knew Nemesis the Warlock had like a anti-religious fundamentalist vibe to it. But it was like a personal vendetta to him when he was talking about basically the Catholic Church and his own upbringing experience of that. And I just wondered as well, did you pick up that... Did you get the sense that for a lot of these writers that they, all the stories that they did, that they had sort of like that really agenda that they wanted to get out, all the frustrations with sort of like, you know, the world at that time as they see it, right, you know, and get their political feelings out into story?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they were doing it. They've been doing it in a few of the comics previous. Obviously, we touched on, I think an important comic that came before 2000 AD was Action, which I know you know about. So, but that crashed, and it kind of, the feeling was at the time in the industry that it had gone a bit too far. And, but it was definitely there. They definitely wanted an outlet to talk to young people, kids, if you like, about important things. You know, and obviously, I mean, you'll know the same as me that is that stuff that you carry around. You can read the stories when you're sort of 12 years old or whatever. And it's like, yeah, Dread kicking ass and Nemesis. Oh, what the hell is this all about? And Slain, what a cool story. And Rogue Trooper, great, you know, future war, and everything's kind of cool on a level of understanding it as an adventure story and just good writing and plot. But then it's the underlying subversion, you know, the messages that were on those other layers that you kind of remember in the years later, you know. I mean, I certainly know that when I was growing up, into my 20s and stuff, you know, you're figuring out how you feel about politics and religion and stuff like that, and I'd be lying if I didn't say, you know, there were little, you know, I was thinking about stuff I'd read in 2018 that's helping me figure that stuff out, you know. You're talking about Dread and the Mega City One and mega cities and the, you know, mass unemployment and where it's all sort of where they had predicted it was all going and stuff, and you're like, when you're watching it happen on TV every week, you're like, holy shit, we're turning into fucking Mega City One, you know. Sorry, Darren, what was your original question?
I'm forgetting myself.
I do ramble.
Go on. I'll move on because I've completely forgot what question while I was just listening to it.
Okay. If you don't know, I have one more, Daz, if you're lacking a question right now. You brought up the fact that, you know, Pat Mills was so important for putting this documentary together. Dude. And I was just curious, had you done the other interviews, would you still have been confident in putting the documentary out there? Or was Pat Mills, just with his importance to the book and then him just being so charismatic and being such a great interview, had you not kept Pat Mills, would you have been confident releasing the documentary as is?
had I not had him at all.
Yeah. You said he was, I've seen other interviews and I've, you know, especially in this interview, you said that he was just so charismatic and that he was so important to the documentary as well as the book that if you had not got him, you wouldn't have been confident. No, but the question is, would you have been confident in still releasing the documentary had it not been for Pat Mills?
I don't know, man. I don't know. If we didn't have him at all,
yeah.
There wouldn't be a 2000 AD story.
Okay.
In all honesty. He was the first person we contacted.
Ah,
super. And we told him as much. We said, Pat, look, we want to make this film. We want it to be a film. We want it to be, you know, interesting and have some depth to it and really talk about sort of some of the issues and really go back and cover it all. And, you know, no, I think we were just lucky, I guess, that we ran into him and he was, all he said was, no, you're right. And someone needs to do it. And quite a few times during the interview, he would sort of raise his fist and say, you know, no one said this before. So I'm, you know, now is the time and let it be said and let the truth be known and that kind of stuff. So we were sitting there like cameras rolling going, yeah. I'll tell you this. There was a three-part BBC show in 2007, I think it was, called Comics Britannia. And they covered like the history of British comics.
Oh, wow.
Well, it was in part three. They were about to, I watched the first two and I was like waiting for this, for the third part to come on in the third week where I knew they'd be covering 2000 AD. And it was so disappointing. They did about a 10-minute sort of slice of their show dedicated to 2000 AD. It was all about Judge Dredd. They had an interview with Pat. And at that point, I'd never seen the guy or heard the guy speak before. And I was like, holy shit, they've spoken to Pat Mills. Wow. You know, this is a guy I've known. I've read his stories all my life, held him up as a great contributed part of 2000 AD, and a hero. And, I just thought, I was so furious. They gave him such short shrift that it burned me. I just carried that around for years. And in fact, that was what we talked about when going back to your first question, when Sean and I were talking, I was like, you know, those fuckers, they had him. They had and they blew it. They wasted the opportunity. They wasted it. I believe we probably even said this to him when we first contacted him. We were like, do you want to get it out? Do you feel the same way? Do you want to get the whole story out? Let's go. And, you know, yeah, we were just lucky. I guess he was up for it. But let me say though, that 2000 AD itself is a loved thing, isn't it, Darren?
Oh yeah, definitely.
It is this, we do a little wind up at the end of the film that, you know, it all gets a bit misty eyed and shit, but it's kind of a quite an important thing that it's all about, you know, if you've read 2000 AD, you can meet somebody tomorrow who you've never met before, a totally different industry to you or whatever. But if they read it as well, it's like you've been mates for years. It really touches everyone in the same place. And we found that, you know, most everybody we spoke to was so passionate about 2000 AD that's the reason they wanted to share, you know, it had also, you know, they had such a love for it that you know, we were just really lucky.
Yeah. I mean,
I remember what you were talking about before. You were talking about USA. Could the USA have released, have had Jimmy Carter shot on the steps of the Senate? Yeah. I don't know though. Could they? They could have.
I don't know, dude. We're talking the 70s.
In the 70s, how comics were then as opposed to over here. I just wondered if, you know.
Well, where could you have seen that? You would have seen it maybe in underground comics.
Mm, yeah.
Like the sort of 70s.
Like Crumb.
You know, the late 60s Crumb, you know, did you have Oz in the States? Was it Oz in the States? I don't know, but underground comics would have had that.
Okay.
Humor. Because it is supposed to be funny. That is a joke. Like, right, having Margaret Thatcher shot on the steps of St. Paul's. It's not, it's angry, but it's not supposed to, you know, mess you up as a kid. You're supposed to think that's funny. It's a joke. And that stuff was going on. And I think one of the cool things about 2000 AD was it brought that kind of underground sensibility into the mainstream. You know, it's weird because 2000 AD kind of had, it was a mainstream comic with an underground sensibility that over the years has become an underground comic again. Like now, today, you know what I mean? It's pretty, obviously the it's not mainstream, certainly.
Do you think, I mean, just a observation I have that, we had a, it was quite lucky for 2000 AD because it was considered, comics of that time were considered like children's comics. And yeah. I know for one that my parents had no idea the sort of stuff I was reading as a kid because they just saw me as reading comics. If the sort of stuff that was happening in 2000 AD was happening on TV, they'd have basically like switched it off and everything because I was reading comics. It was just like considered, oh, he's just, you know, there's nothing like, you know, in there. Did you ever get that feeling as well that you had, it was sort of like, and I think there's actually a quote in the film that, in the documentary, it says that kids could see the sort of things they weren't allowed to actually go to the cinema to see in, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Jeff Barrow, isn't it, who says that. He's like, everyone at school is talking about watching Enter the Dragon and whatever, Dirty Harry on VHS, and you know, you couldn't, it was really hard to get hold of, but this is happening every week in 2080. Definitely, I mean, anything that you find that's not mainstream as a young person, that you sort of identify with, you have a certain amount of ownership of it, don't you? And it's for you and it's for your mates and you all sort of own it. I mean, I talked about this to quite a lot of people actually during the filming, and it's difficult to, you know, with the internet and everything, it's really difficult to discover something undiscovered these days. I don't know what young people, you know, I guess maybe it's just made it more and more and more local. So you have to go and you just go and support the bands that play in your local venue, read comics that are published by the guy down the road. I don't know, you know, I mean, it's actually hard to find that, but yeah, you definitely own it, don't you? You definitely kind of feel that it's speaking to you and it's your thing. In terms of like the censorship, the violence, I don't know. I didn't personally have a problem. My mum didn't used to let me like the Young Ones because they had swearing in it.
Yeah.
Like the Young Ones. Oh, I had a tape that videotape that I used to patch up with sellotape because I used to watch it so much it would wear out. But yeah, I guess comics is just nobody sort of pays much of mind to them unless they see a massive dinosaur chewing up humans, you know, or something out of flesh, or I mean, I guess if my parents had seen some of the stuff that Kevin O'Neill was doing in Nemesis, you know, that alien they had that where his right arm was a massive vagina with shots and a big tongue hanging out, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe they would have sort of said, "What the fuck is that?" Hide him under your bed, I guess.
Yeah, because we did a podcast, me and the other guys, on 2000 AD a while ago, and I was, because they're all American, I was telling them some of the stories. When you actually sort of put them all together and remember these things, you realize that a lot of it was really fucked up. I mean, if you think of Nemesis the Warlock, there's a scene where he actually kills a busload of kids. You know, and afterwards when he's like, you know.
I don't remember that, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul doesn't even remember that.
Yeah, he shoots the bus driver. Yeah. And basically.
Oh, are they all aliens or something?
No, they're all humans.
They're humans or something.
No, they're all human kids. He shoots the bus driver and he's like escaping from the talking minder and everything. Yeah. And afterwards his companion sort of says, you know, you killed a bus full of kids. And he just says, yeah, but they would have grown up into being human adults anyway. And they would have been my enemies then.
Whoa. You know?
I remember Torquemada slaughtering baby aliens and stuff. No, I don't remember that one. Fucking hell, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah,
there was some dark stuff. I mean, I certainly, did you see the stuff, did you see the John Hinklinton Nemesis stuff? It was like mid to late 80s.
I've not read all of Nemesis. I've read quite bits of it.
Well, have a look up some of that stuff, man. John Hinklinton, Nemesis. Well, John Hinklinton's not with us anymore, unfortunately, but he was, wow. Some of the stuff that was going on in his head. I mean, that's some intense, some of the most intense artwork I think I ever saw. I mean, you know, you got Bisley and the violence and all the blood splatter and all of that. That's one thing, but wow. Hinklinton stuff on Nemesis was something else. I didn't know what to make of it at the time.
there's also a storyline where he puts a chastity belt, Torquemada puts a chastity belt on his wife that basically explodes if anybody tries to have sex with his wife.
That's funny, isn't it? That's funny.
Yeah. I thought it was good. But also, and she gets mad because this Torquemada's mad brother tries to have sex with her anyway. So, but it's like, this was in like a comic, you know, this was in a comic which was considered kids. It's just unbelievable. I mean, you have a whole Kano storyline with his,
you say it's for kids, Darren, but it is for kids, but it's talking to kids, not like some people fucking talk down to kids. It's talking to kids and saying, hey, this is a fucked up idea, isn't it? some kids will go with you and some kids will stop buying it, but it didn't, you know, I never felt until the point where it did dip in quality a bit, which is, you know, you probably want to talk about, but in the '90s where it kind of suffered for all sorts of reasons, that was the great thing about 2000 AD. You knew you'd read it and be missing the point of stuff, but it didn't matter because you were like, you know, it talked to you as if you were a fellow intelligent human being, not like a child every week. Yeah. Sorry, you were going to say about Kano?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with you know, the what was in Kano's box that he used to carry around, that's it. And the payoff to that was absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
brilliant. Because when he opens the box and you find out that it's basically half a brain. But he thinks it's his brain, but it's actually not.
That's the spoiler alert. I don't know if I'd probably seen Apocalypse Now by that point, but it was Apocalypse Now for us. Yeah. Like that is what, like, if you were 20 years old, 25 years old, you know, a conscientious objector or whatever, and you went to see Apocalypse Now, that film would have been for you in the 70s when it came out. And that Kano Bad Company story, that was my Apocalypse Now. You know, it was reflecting how we sort of were starting to feel about war and stuff like that. And it was a dark war story. And then it had that fucked up Kurt's dark journey into darkness in it part as well, which was, but the whole sci-fi sort of slant on it, which was just awesome, man. I drew Kano on all my school books. I mean, Judge Dredd was so wicked to draw because of the helmet and the shoulder pad and the eagle and everything. And I used to love drawing him, but Kano's head with the straps holding his fucking head on, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Love drawing that.
Yeah. I mean, you alluded to this, you know, about the 90s, and one of the things that sort of, you know, you talked about Pat Mills getting angry. One of the things that he sort of got really angry with was what he called the Paul Bishop, Andy Dingle era. And I just wanted to...
Andy Dingle, yeah.
That's it, yeah. And I just wanted to basically, you know, ask about, you know, that era. What, you know, were you reading 2000 AD at that time, and what you actually thought of that?
Yeah, I was. I was actually, so I left at, I was at a college in 97, and I sort of bought it now and then. I was in Swansea, and there was a pretty damn good comic shop down there, but I'd sort of fallen out of all comics apart from one or two, and I'd buy 2000 AD now and then. I was also buying, that was sort of Sin City was sort of really good at the time, and Hellboy was a good comic at the time, and they were kind of the only things that I thought that were really interesting me around then. So sort of like 93 to 97-ish. And 2000 AD, it was one of those things where I'd buy it and then want it to be so great and just be like, it's not really doing it for me anymore. But at the same time, I was thinking to myself, I think, oh, but I'm getting older, you know, maybe it's just sort of isn't for me anymore. When I actually left college in 97, then, I actually bought it regularly again for a couple of years because I had some money and I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to get back into it and show my support and kind of, you know, that sort of thing. So, but yeah, it was scrabbling around a bit, wasn't it? It had lost. Well, this is it. And I mean, I learned why that was the reason and put it in the film because when we spoke to people, because obviously they had all the talent, the big names that had made it such a great comic that I loved as a kid, it had all been sucked out and all gone over to, or should I say come over to the US and, you know, that's, you know, if week after week after week, the top talent's being creamed off the top, of course, it's going to suffer, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, do you think as well, it was probably trying too hard to be sort of to be shocking, because it was going more to we're trying to push the envelope, showing more like nudity and, you know, and getting the humor even more gross than before, and that they were maybe just trying too hard on the shock value and not enough on actually making good stories.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? I mean, you can either be cool, or as soon as you start trying to be cool, that is fucking fatal, you know?
Yeah.
Can't try and be cool because your audience will sniff it out a mile off, you know, they'll smell it a mile off. So no, it was cool. And then I think as it was losing its readership and becoming a bit more of a niche thing, it was still acting like it was mainstream. And you know, maybe I've always thought to myself, maybe it's that wasn't working. But yeah, they definitely had some bad missteps, didn't they, with some dodgy, you know, some dodgy strips, which were probably the bad ideas, and that terrible, awful, horrible advertising campaign they drove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the things as well that I think that time in 90s was sort of such, to me, it seemed to me like a dumbing down type, you know, in culture, but we were sort of like, you know, with stuff like Lad Mags and Loaded and all stuff like that, but it was sort of like trying to appeal to that. Did you get that impression?
Yeah, definitely. It was trying to be slick and a bit more polished and trying to sort of appear to be a bit more in control of itself, when the whole joy of 2000 AD was that it was just chaos when years before, I think. You know, I mean, we're saying that about the 90s, and it's definitely worth saying that it's really, really, you know, you fast forward to like today or the last sort of 10 years, give or take, it's found itself now, hasn't
yeah.
it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's happy with itself. It's comfortable with what it is. And I think in that period, it wasn't comfortable with what it was. It was a bit embarrassed, I think, of itself in a way, if that makes sense. And you didn't feel cool reading it. You fucking didn't. You feel cool reading it today, and you felt cool, fucking cool reading it in the 80s and 70s. But no, in that period, it was a bit embarrassing, to be honest. But you know, these things happen. Somehow it survived. I don't know how it did. I think it was literally, guys, I think it was a coin toss away from getting canned as far as the management were concerned at that time. They certainly had no idea what the hell it was. Luckily, I think Bishop and Diggle, Bishop certainly, you know, they knew what they were trying to do. They knew it was worth pursuing and trying to save. And I think everything they tried to do was in the best interest of the comic, to be honest.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about Bishop actually, because he was sort of like the editor and sort of in charge, he was sort of could be portrayed a little bit as like the villain. I mean, certainly Pat Mills had some like negative things to say to him, but I thought he came across quite well in this, a lot better than he did in the book Earth Will Power Over, which is ironic because he wrote it, because he actually sort of recognised the fact that he basically was a bit of a bastard to work with. And I just wonder how you felt he came across in his interviews.
I didn't, to be honest, I mean, I read Full Power Overload as well. So we knew going to meet, David Bishop that here was a guy who was basically, A, he was at the helm of the comic through some of its roughest times, but B, he knew why, because he'd literally written the book on the history of 2000 AD. So we knew he knew a lot about it all. So we were really excited to go and talk to him, but I didn't sort of really know, obviously hadn't really seen an interview with him before, really read much of his stuff. But what a guy, you know, he really wanted to, you know, really early on was just was very self-aware and literally, and apologized on camera, like for being an arsehole. I mean, what a guy to do that. He looked down then and he's like, sorry guys, I know I was a bit of a prick, you know? And I tell you what, I know that, without really wanting to talk about things that are not to do with the film, but it's not really too much of my business to discuss, but I'll tell you that some hatchets have been buried since people have seen the film. I think I'll say that. Which has been a really nice thing to be involved, because it is, you know, it's a living, breathing history, isn't it? And it's people's lives, and it's, and the comic is obviously still ongoing. So it goes on and on and on. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's nice to think that, some people could put some stuff behind them after having seen it. But yeah, honest, again, really lucky to have David be so honest and candid and open about, that stuff. Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? It's good. He's good.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things as well, we talked a bit about sort of America and the fact that they were, a lot of the writers and everything sort of went over to America. Where do you see the 2000 AD's influence on the American market? On what books and what companies can you see it there?
Where do you see it? Sorry, if you don't mind me pinging that straight back to you. I know you were doing the interview. Sorry.
Well, I mean, I would see it in sort of like, you know, a line like, Vertigo.
I believe that's a line in the documentary. If it was no 2000 AD, there'd be no Vertigo.
Hey, Karen Berger, when we asked her to be in the documentary, she was like, wow, I'm so pleased you've asked. And so kindly agreed to be in it and wanted to get that message across. She said, she emailed us back and said, hey, you know, there would be no Vertigo without 2000 AD. We're like, shit, Karen, could you say that on camera? More than happy to, because it's the absolute truth. And I've seen, all of us have seen how Vertigo itself and the freedom those writers in that period were allowed, you know, how that impacted on not just comics, you know, but I think all pop culture in the States and slowly, slowly it's come through into TV. I mean, I think Image are having a sort of renaissance of a similar kind right now, where they've sort of obviously struck deals with all these writers to just let them off the hook and write what they want. And what's happening, these comics are awesome, you know, and that's what Karen did, and Jeanette Kahn and those guys, you know, they just said to them, listen, we want you to do what you're doing for 2000 AD and just bring it to, you know, Swamp Thing, and bring it to, these characters, you know, Doom Patrol and all these guys and Animal Man, and flip them around and see what you can do. And yeah, it was wicked, because that was, you know, I was buying comics. You know, I bought by all sorts of comics, and I was buying those and supporting our guys, going into comic shop every week. And as Watchmen was coming out and Black Orchid and Sandman and just like, why God, you know, really, really proud of them all doing so well and being so lauded and successful. And it was no surprise to us. We knew they were great writers and we were so pleased. And then, you know, it is a shame that 2000 AD took a real hit after that. But, you know, nonetheless, I think that's been my experience of what 2000 AD's impact has been over the years. And that is, you know, an important part of the documentary that we wanted to get across.
Just a little aside. aside from that, just a bit of curiosity. I don't know if you read much Marvel at all these days, but did you read the short series, the Captain Britain one we did?
Yes.
During Secret Wars.
I know where this is going.
No, I didn't, Darren, no.
Have you heard about it?
Yeah, I went in Secret Wars when it all kicked off. I mean, I keep an eye on it, and Ian, a very good friend of mine, has got the local comic book store here where I live. You know, he Dead Universe Comics plug.
Yeah,
he just lives and breathes everything, so he just keeps me in touch with anything. But what was that all about then? Should I check it out?
No,
you very much. I won't say too much, but as a 2000 AD fan, at some point we'll release it in a graphic novel format. Yeah. It's the Captain Britain one. It's only 2 issues, but it's like a homage to 2000 AD.
Oh, really? Who wrote that?
Al Ewing.
Al Ewing.
Yeah.
Is it Al Ewing?
Oh, really? Wicked. Oh, cool. All right. Yeah, good. They're still doing it, guys.
Yeah, they're not subtle about it either. It's very clearly who it's supposed to be.
Wicked. No, I mean, look, Al Ewing, another 2000 AD name. You know, Rob Williams. Do you know what? About last summer, while we were sort of still, where were we? End of post production, something like that. Vertigo released their lineup of brought out something like a dozen new books last autumn.
Something like that, yeah, that sounds about right.
Last fall. And it was something like, you know, if you had like a writer and artist on each book, it was something like 9 out of the 12 people involved in those titles were 2000 AD alumni.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, you know, still today, they're still going over and to the States, and it's still happening, you know?
Yeah, that new line of Vertigo is amazing.
Yeah, very good. You know, I think that was kind of a bit of a response to what Image have been doing in the last 5 years or so, isn't it? They were like getting back to what Vertigo.
They were doing Vertigo better than Vertigo.
Yeah, exactly. Image had done a Vertigo, so Vertigo were doing a Vertigo, yeah. Yeah. That's good. All that stuff is great. I mean, it feels like to be honest, guys, it's been a while since I've read a Spider-Man or a Batman or something. I mean, I do buy them now and then, but you know, it's a whole different experience, isn't it? To buy.
Yeah. And now is not the best time either. So I wouldn't recommend going out of your way, but I would recommend you picking up that Captain Britain thing. If I can try to send that to you, that'd be great.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, but what I do enjoy, I really enjoy is these Image comics and quality stuff where anything can happen. It's mm-hmm. a bit scary, isn't it? You know, indie, all the indie books that I love, you could just pick it up and you know not to get your hooks into some character too much because everyone's disposable. And I love it. I love that feeling of not knowing where a story's going to go. It's a total opposite thing of picking up a Silver Surfer you know what you're going to get and you get it, you know, the Hulk, whatever. I love it. I love that as well, but there's no feeling quite like it's a very similar thing reading 2000 AD. You just don't know what is going to happen.
Speaking of that, there is something I'd like your opinion on, because then talking about the future of 2000 AD, one of the things that's unique about Judge Dredd is that the character ages. As time goes on. So basically each year in a year of 2000 AD, Judge Dredd is ages by a year. Now, if this goes on, at some point you would think that they're either going to have to basically kill it, you know, do a death of Judge Dredd or come out with some sort of like sci-fi reason of, you know, prolonging his life. Which way do you think they'll go? Do you think they'll actually maybe do a death of Judge Dredd type thing? Because that would be a big deal in comics if they were to do that.
Yeah, I don't know really. I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be down to John Wagner.
Mm.
It's going to be his decision what happens to Judge Dredd. And if I could predict what was going to happen, then I'd be writing for 2000 AD. Whatever idea that I come up with is just going to be shit. You know, John Wagner's going to write that and I have no doubt it will be. I'm sure some people will love it, some people will hate it, but it will be the definitive this is what will happen, and we trust John Wagner to do it. And whatever happens, 2000 AD will carry on. Possibly even the Dread Strip will carry on. Who knows? But it will deal with it. I think, guys, I just saw this little thing about, I think George R. R. Martin, you know, just sometimes gets bored and kills a character off just to see how he'll write his way out. Comes up with brilliant stuff.
Uh-huh.
Challenges himself. I don't know if that's true or not, but it feels like it sometimes. You're just like, fuck it, I'm bored of that guy. Kill him off. And let's see where we go. Hey, let's see how that upsets everyone. I don't know, but it'll be cool. Whatever it'll be cool, I'm sure.
Okay, Daz, unless you have any more questions, I think we're going to wrap this bad boy up.
No, I just want to just say, you know, congratulations on the documentary, because I, you know, I absolutely loved it. You know, I got it for Christmas. just one maybe last little question is, what sort of has the response been of fans?
Oh, man. Everyone's loved it. I just couldn't be more pleased, you know. And in fact, you know, fans, there was a bit of a worry because we hoped that we had served the fans well enough, and you know, unanimously the feedback has been great from the fans. And I knew it would be, because this is why we're going back to the very beginning, and why, you know, we thought to ourselves, literally, if a 2000 AD film was coming out, really, no matter what, I would be there. I'd go and see it, and it would be great to see it championed. And the fact that, like, we've also had feedback from people who aren't 2000 AD fans, and even some who never heard of 2000 AD before, and they're saying things like, shit, I got to check this stuff out, you know? Or, like I said, the message about creative people just being trodden on and treated like shit by the suits. That's a story that bleeds out into a lot of different areas, you know. I think we've been really, really, really pleased with the feedback so far. And I am personally really happy that the US audience are now going to get to see it. I would have thought it would be a matter of months now. Because a big part of the story is that British-American relationship. I mean, we haven't really touched on it so much, have we? But Darren, but isn't it? It's quite an important thing. The whole sort of, why doesn't 2000 AD sell so well in the States, even though the US fans that get it seem to really cherish it, sort of side of it. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I mean, why do you think that is? Do you think it's because it's sold as a weekly, which is different to the monthly format, or?
Probably, I don't know. There's many reasons. I mean, it's been digital for a long time now, so that's out of the window. That doesn't play a part in it at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they did do some American formats where they did some collections where they, you know, where they, because that's where I first got Bad Company from. We did Bad Company, and they do like a backup strip, but they put several episodes together to give it that American feel.
What, those quality
that's
ones, yeah,
that's
yeah.
The one, yeah,
and
yeah.
The Eagle ones. The Eagle Comics ones were some of the first ones that I remember buying myself down at Forbidden Planet, you know, because they were like 20p. But it was Dread. They recolored it, didn't they? They colored them all up.
That's
nice, nice little comics they were. I think they sold pretty well back then. I don't know. Comics were just massive then, though, weren't they, in the 80s? And then they went to shit in the 90s and like everything else.
That's pretty universal everywhere, yeah.
It's an interesting thing. Go and see the film and check out what we think. Why 2000 AD doesn't work in the States.
That sounds like a spin-off, yeah. That's cool. All right, Paul, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. If you haven't already, go to what's the website again, Paul? Is it FutureShock2000AD?
FutureShock2000AD.com. Just check us on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. It's FutureShockDoc. And we'll be putting all the news of any release dates and stuff coming soon.
All right, perfect. All right, Paul, thanks for joining us. And that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out the show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.